Welcome to Season 1 of Disability Bandwidth,
a show where we talk with disability leaders each week about career, life, and technology. I'm Sam Pru.
And I'm Nikki Nolan.
Let's get started.
Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Deborah Rue, and my pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm the CEO of Rue Global Impact and the executive chair of Billion Strong. I am a white woman with gray hair and purple streaks in it, and I'm proud to have my Billion Strong background behind me because Rue Global Impact is very proud to be building Billion Strong. So I have on a black shawl and an olive green shirt and bluish glasses.
Thank you so much for being here. We would love to just like learn a little bit about what is your story? What got you into this line of work?
Well, and thank you both for featuring me. I listened to a couple of your other episodes and very powerful conversation. So congratulations. I come from the banking and financial industry. I was an executive level. My mom was so proud, blah, blah, blah. But I was in the banking financial industry. But when my daughter was born, my oldest daughter, she was born with Down syndrome. And I was really surprised at how my peers responded to that. It's sort of, it was such a tragedy that my daughter had been born with Down syndrome. And I was sort of bummed out about that because I just really continue to believe my daughter's perfect just the way she is. And so I always thought, what am I going to do with my life to support my daughter? And in the banking industry, I started hiring people with disabilities because we had a program. I thought it was really cool. And then when my daughter reached middle school, and once again, we were being told she couldn't join the workforce, she'll add no value to society. I thought, what do you mean? And I'm like, so I just sort of woke up to the fact that people with disabilities were being excluded from the workforce in ways that I did not understand. I also am a person that identifies with disabilities. I'm neurodiverse. I have ADHD, which is wonderful and a curse sometimes because it's wonderful if you're working because you work, but it's bad because you don't stop. And that can be bad for my mind sometimes. But, and then as I mentioned, I identify as a mother with daughter with disabilities, my daughter, Sarah with Down syndrome. So I am the community. What that means is I'm the community. But when my daughter, once again, middle school came and we started hearing how she would not add any value, I thought, okay, I've got to join this conversation in a more empowering way so that I can help people like my daughter. But that's how the journey began.
I want to focus in on that a little bit because I think it's extremely interesting, kind of that identity as a mother and as a family member and as a friend. And you talked a little bit about how there's this perception that, yeah, it's a tragedy. It's a tragic thing that's happened. I wonder, first of all, have you noticed that starting to change over, you know, kind of the last several years? And second of all, how do you approach that as a mother and as a family member to support somebody with a disability who is being exposed to those messages? Because the messages that we're exposed to in culture have such an impact on not only what we can do, but what we as people with disabilities believe that we can do.
So powerful. That one comment is just so powerful. And you're right. I remember my daughter at one point, Samuel, said, "Stop telling people I have Down syndrome. I do not have Down syndrome. She used the normal word. And I was about had a heart attack. And I said, no, you don't want to be normal. Who wants to be normal? That's so overrated. But entity is so important. And also, Samuel, I was talking to a friend of mine who's blind that works for a large corporation. And his coworker said to him, quote, "Man, I'd rather be dead than be blind." Well, how is he supposed to respond to that, first of all, as a coworker? What? You'd rather be dead than have my life? How do I respond to that? But I will tell you, I do see changes. I'm optimistic. I'm seeing changes. But I think that there's a lot of work to do. And I see us starting to really, especially the younger people, thank goodness for the younger people with disabilities, because they're really owning their entire life. And they're really, I had a client ask me this morning, what language to use? You know, that's something that employers struggle with. And I said, well, I personally like identity language. I like lived experiences. I am a woman with lived experience as a wife, you know, but as a parent, as an individual. And so I said, but more importantly, ask, right? Because everybody has different views of what they want to be called. So take the time to ask. But I do see some shifts and changes, but I will tell you, I still don't think it's happening enough. And I think also most of the conversations that are being held are still being held by people that look like they don't have disabilities, like myself. I have to tell you I have a disability. And so I think that's why it was so important to me to start the Billion Strong, you know, and when I was starting Billion Strong, I'll just say this to you, Samuel, based on your question, I was going to be the CEO because I have a lot of experience being a CEO. I have a lot of experience. So I thought it made sense. I'm going to do this. This makes sense. My company's building it. Yay. And then somebody, yeah, you can see where this is going, Nikki. So one of our board members who actually he has a disability and he's quadriplegic, uses a wheelchair. And he said, oh, good. Another white woman without a disability is going to start a disability organization. And I'm like, come on. And he's like, well, you know, the optics don't look good. And I thought, he's right. He's right. And so I didn't do it. I actually made Dr. LaMondre Pugh, who is a man with lived experience with muscular dystrophy and a wheelchair user. He is the CEO and he's as qualified as me and as talented, and representation matters. That was a long answer, but I think things are changing, right? I think they're changing, but we got work to do.
Yeah, I love that. And I love also kind of in your book, you spend a lot of time talking about the importance of marketing and perception, because it matters so much, not just for companies and for brands, but for like people, for people with disabilities themselves. I moderate the Are Blind subreddit. And one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing is talking to people who have been diagnosed as they're about to go blind and trying to convince them that their life is not over, right? And your quote just brought that to mind.
It would have said, think that people are already experiencing the loss of their sight, and now people would rather be dead than be them. I mean, what? Mm-hmm. How do I even respond?
Right. And how do you respond when that is coming from somebody who is going to be blind in 2 years? They have a diagnosis from their doctor. And yeah, it's a, wow, a tricky problem. Anyway, yeah, it is.
You bring up a really good point. When I was first thinking about Billion Strong, I thought, this is ridiculous. Why does society keep underestimating us? Why? And then LaMondre said, yeah, but I'm also very concerned, Deborah, because we underestimate ourselves. Now, I did not realize I had ADHD till I was much, I got diagnosed when I was in my 50s. Oh boy, things made a lot more sense to me. I was like, okay, now I get it. And yes, I had problems in school and I had problems, you know, but I didn't have the same kind of problems that LaMondre had, where LaMondre was told, for example, his mother was told he would die before he was 5. So now start wrapping your head around that. So what society tells people with disabilities, that's getting that out of your head, I think is a huge issue.
It's so hard. But yeah, those messages of like having this perfect child, like my mom, when she found out that I had learning disabilities, told me that she had to mourn the loss of the perfect child. And like those messages came, you know, Sam and I have very different upbringings as well. And so it's been interesting to see, like, I was told I could be cured. I was told that all of these things, they took me to lots of therapies and tried to cure me. And so that message, it's very hard to unlearn some of these like ableist messages that are given to us.
And I don't think we realize how bad they are. Right? They're everywhere.
I mean, I credit a lot of my success today with the fact that my father was blind. And so I grew up with a role model.
Well, so you grew up being blind is normal because
exactly,
it was
my father.
It's normal. You wouldn't be great. Oh, and then also, and this is something else we want to tackle at Billion Strong with the community. But another thing that we do is and I apologize for even hesitating, but things have been so intense with COVID-19. And of course, who got it, worse? Of course, the community of people with disabilities during all of that. But I do think that society, well, the employers are certainly paying attention to what's happening because they are seeing the great resignation where 40% of the workforce are leaving, or they say that they will not be in their same job a year from now. 40%. And then young people are saying, we don't want to work with a company that isn't making a difference to the world. We're tired of the greed and the gluttony and the taking advantage of the people in our planet. So the young people aren't even going to work for you. And now we want to find the individuals with disabilities. The Valuable 500 brought 500 CEOs together, vowing to include people with disabilities in their workforce. But we are not coming out. You know, Sam, if somebody meets you and they can see, they'll see that you are blind, you know, but Nikki, they, you know, and me, they'll assume other things about us because they don't have the verbal cues. But I just think it's so important that we take all of these things back.
And ending the fragmentation in the community that you talk about. I mean, it's one of the reasons I'm so excited to be co-hosting this podcast with Nikki, because too often people with disabilities meet screen readers. And once we're accessible to screen readers, we're done.
I know. You're right. You're right. And coming together to share your talents, you know, what you bring to the table. That's what people don't understand. We all have abilities and we all have disabilities. You know, Sam, and I'll turn it back to Nikki, but I remember a real good friend of mine, Dr. Larry Stadden, who had lost his eyesight at the age of 5, and he was a director at the National Science Foundation. And when he lost his eyesight due to a childhood injury, they started trying to teach him to play the piano because, you know, all blind people are musically geniuses, right?
Don't get me started.
He's going to start rapping for, no. So he finally, the piano teacher, after about 6 lessons, said, I feel guilty. I cannot take your money. This young boy is not musically talented. But he wound up being a very, very brilliant scientist. And, you know, brilliant. But he married a piano teacher. So that's
amazing. I want to shift this a little bit. So just for the people listening, what is the Billion Strong community?
It's www.billion-strong.org. And it is a brand new global nonprofit focused on bringing together the 1.3 billion people with disabilities. Now, we know there are a lot more people in the world with disabilities than 1.3 billion. There's no way those numbers are correct. But at the same time, you know, we're all as society trying to figure out, you know, how to get us to identify. How do we come together with pride like the LGBT community did, LGBTQIA? But the reason why that matters also is because they took back their words, the words that were used to hurt them. So L is lesbian, G is gay, you know, U is queer. These words were used and are still used to hurt people that are part of that community. So they've taken the words back. So we all at Billion Strong, we want to come together with pride. We want to support each other, buy from each other, employ from each other, support entrepreneurs with disabilities, have professional classes that include master classes that look like us. There's so much talent in our field. There's so much talent, but we have to come together with pride. And one of the things that we're thinking about doing, which I think is really cheeky of us, is taking on a project that encourages all of us to come out and identify that we do have lived experiences with disabilities on our social media handles, our bios, our email signature lines, in our resumes, and our CVs. Now, we've always been told don't do that in our resumes and CVs, but we're also rethinking everything right now. And so maybe we should come out with pride.
As someone, you know, who is blind, I don't get the option to quote unquote pass. If somebody sees me, they know I have a cane and that's it. But as you're talking about this, I'm thinking back to a struggle that the LGBTQIA community has had in the last 10 or 15 years, kind of around perhaps outing people who may not want to be outed or who may feel some sense of shame or something like that. Is the community of people with invisible disabilities going through that same struggle and having that same dialogue? And if so, what are the solutions and what is the path forward?
So because I have a non-visible disability, I do tell people I'm dyslexic. I've always known that I was dyslexic, but it's only been in the last year or so that I am starting to realize that I'm probably on the autism spectrum. And I did have to out myself at work because I became the co-lead of our disabilities ERG. And I didn't think that I outed myself until somebody who didn't have a disability asked if I felt pressured to out myself. And I didn't think about it. And then I was like, I guess I did. There was a lot of pressure for me to be publicly disabled. And I didn't hate it. And I think a lot of amazing things have come from me being publicly disabled. It's just, I did. The experience of telling my parents and their reaction was really traumatic to me. And I think Sam's question is really interesting. And I'm curious to hear from other people as well. Like, is it hard? Is it not hard? Like, because that's an access issue that we can like start exploring, you know?
It is. It's a great question. We do believe if we come together with pride, we're going to make a difference. But at the same time, it is interesting coming out because I've seen other people come out with non-visible disabilities. And sometimes it did look like they were just coming up with something. But what's interesting about that is that these are all included in the definition of disabilities. So either we rewrite our laws or we accept that you, if you have dyslexia, are part of this community. If you have ADHD, if you have cancer, diabetes, I mean, we've made the term so broad. And of course, the definition of disabilities in the Americans with Disabilities Act differs from the one in the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So that a bit confusing and confusing for employers. But if we just have to come together and support each other, we have to. I wanted to make sure at Brilliant Strong, because I've been in the field so long, we're not a very welcoming field often. You know, oh, great, now they're doing a podcast. Well, instead of, oh, great, now they're doing a podcast. Yay, let's hear the diverse voices and let's get the different opinions. But I think we have to come together. And so the one point I was making was they said, okay, well, what are y'all going to do a Billion Strong to protect us if we come out and we have, you know, we're discriminated against? And these happen to be Americans, and there's a reason why I'm going to say that. And so I said, well, I understand how you use the word protection because I'm also an American. That means we're going to sue each other, right? And I said, we're not going to sue people at Billion Strong. That's not what Billion Strong's for. Billion Strong is an identity organization. We want to come together with pride. We want to highlight the voices out there. We want to talk about the corporations that are including us. But I said, but at the same time, as an American with disabilities, we're going to have to be brave at some point because our brothers and sisters in other countries, some of them don't have a chance. If they're born with disabilities, they're told to kill the babies. So, I mean, this is very, very serious around the world. What is happening to our brothers and sisters with disabilities? So if you're in a developed country and you have a disability, you have more options and more rights than your brothers and sisters in other countries. So we have to not be selfish. We have to really want to get out and help each other.
I think speaking of being selfish, there's also a kind of false conflict that comes up where in the developed world, even we believe, oh, there's only so many resources for accessibility. And so if money is spent on captioning, then it won't be spent on audio description. Or if money is spent on audio description, then there won't be enough for captions or like things like that. And it's like we're trying to divide up a limited pie and it causes conflict within our community. Is that something that you've seen and how do you deal with it?
Oh, yes. We have such a lack thinking and a poverty consciousness. It's ridiculous because there really is enough for everybody. There is. And if we all came together and supported each other, we would change the world, not only for us, but the future generations. So I do not believe that I compete with anybody. And I always celebrate. And one thing that I did, I've always, you know, I want to have you and Nikki on my show talking about what you're doing. But I do because I'm always telling the story of what others are doing. So let's celebrate each other. And it is not lack-based. The amount of money that's being spent on people with disabilities in the States alone, it is ridiculous how much. But at the same time, I get a little frustrated with it because I don't think a lot of that money really goes down to really changing lives for people with disabilities. So I think a lot of the money is wasted. I think it's wasted. So I think let's do something with that. But society just has to decide this is important enough to do it and that we want to hear the different voices.
Hey, as we approach the midpoint of this amazing episode, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
Hello, my name is Ted. I am a full-time screen reader and switch input or alternative navigation user. I am a member of Fable's community of accessibility testers. If you're listening to this podcast, you know just how important it is to integrate the voices of people with disabilities into every aspect of your accessibility journey. Fable can help you do that. From improving your accessibility training with Fable Upskill to working directly with assistive technology users with Fable Engage, we can help you take the next step in your accessibility journey. For more information, visit our website at makeitfable.com.
Now that we've heard from our sponsor, let's continue the interview.
Can you tell us a little bit about the statement, if disability is not on your board's agenda, neither is diversity? What does that mean to you?
I will start it with, this was a while back and it's much better, SHRM, Society of Human Resources Management. They've done wonderful jobs of diversity inclusion. But I remember years ago, like 8 years ago, I went to an event and they were saying, okay, for diversity, equality, and inclusion, who all should be included? Women, LGBTQ, you know, and so the participants started shouting out names. And so I just, out of stubbornness, sat back and thought, I'm just curious how long it's going to take us to be included. I was just curious how long it would take. They came up with 18 other diverse categories and still no one had mentioned disabilities. And the instructor was about to stop it. And I said, disabilities. And everybody's like, oh, yeah. And so to me, it's often an afterthought. We had a fireside chat with Software AG. They're starting with disabilities. Of all of the groups, they're going to start with us.
Yay!
But, and so we've nagged and complained and everything, and a lot, and SHRM is much better, but we still see often disability is not being included in the DEI. They're talking about women. We're talking about Black and brown. Yay, all very important. But disability never seems to make it. And some of it is because employers think it's too hard. And I say that's bull crap. And if we hear that from you, we're not going to work for you. And I mean, we, all of us aren't going to work for you, because one thing I meant to say when Sam had asked a question is, those of us that don't look like we have disabilities, or we love someone with a disabilities, we are more rampant about this, and we will fight you and sue you and embarrass you in the media if you don't include our loved ones with disabilities. It's interesting because we really do want our loved ones included. And I think now the younger people are saying, well, not only that, we want everybody included. So it's not just our community fighting for our community, which we're still not doing. But
how does this intersectionality play into it? I mean, there was sort of a criticism, I think, of like early 70s feminism that it was sort of only inclusive of white women. And I wonder if we are falling into the same trap in the disability community, and how do we avoid it?
Yes, we definitely are. We definitely are. And it's something that I know I've been really, really, really going on about. And sometimes I feel like I'm nagging everybody, but I really am bringing up the conversation. And I think sometimes, Sam, one reason why I get invited to speak, I mean, I'm known in the industry and stuff, but I think sometimes they almost find it's easier to ask somebody that they think might not have a disability, you know, because they're afraid to say things wrong. And so now, of course, I keep coming out and saying, you know, I am proud to be part of the community. But I think we've got a lot of work to do with this particular thing. I think there are just so many moving parts. And I just think there's still a whole lot of work to do. But I am actually getting very, very hopeful, because the younger people are just not willing to sit back and wait for my generation, the baby boomers, to leave some good legacy. I also complain about is people my age in the disability field, we have to turn the microphones over and give the younger people a chance to be more engaged in this. And I see some of that happening, and I actually am being very deliberate about it. And so I gave up my seat at the table, for example. And then somebody said, no, don't give up your seat. Just pull up another chair. But guess what? It doesn't really work that way. There are a certain amount of chairs at the table. Yeah. We like to think it works that way, but it does not. So, yeah.
What are some of the things that companies can adopt to make their businesses more inclusive to people with disabilities?
Well, I think there's so much they can do. But first of all, you got to make it safe. I think the leaders need to talk about why we value people with disabilities. You've got to have a sign from the leadership that it is safe. And don't just say it's safe. It truly has to be safe. And so leaders also should come out and talk about their personal lived experiences with disabilities. And anyone that says they don't have a lived experience with disabilities, you really need to think about that. Because so many of us have disabilities. Because I thought that when my daughter was born with Down syndrome, I thought she was the first person I ever really met with disabilities. And my grandfather had lost both of his legs to diabetes. But so there's so much still awareness building that we still have to do to once again normalize that we belong here and we're capable of being here and we're very talented. But everybody thinks when we talk about disabilities, wheelchair, the white cane, and people with Down syndrome, you know.
Yep. There's also kind of a saying that's popular in corporate culture, that being, if it doesn't get measured, it doesn't get done. And we've seen a lot of kind of Apple and Microsoft putting disability-related efforts into their OKRs. Is that a good thing? Or is accessibility and diversity and disability something that can't be measured and quantified?
Great question. And it definitely can be quantified and measured. You should be asking your employees if they have disabilities, and you should be asking them in a way that they feel comfortable answering you. Now, there are a lot of different things that we can do to make people feel comfortable, but it should be very deliberate by the employer. And, you know, if your websites aren't accessible and the applications that you use every day, you know, if I go to check out for my benefits, see what benefits are. If things aren't accessible, you're telling your employees with disabilities they're not welcome. And accessibility, of course, as we all know, improves the process for everyone. So I think the most important thing that a company can do is talk about it. And the leaders talk about why they're so proud of their employees, but talk about their own lived experiences. And if you don't do that, it's hard for the employees to really feel that they just think it's another program. They don't think it's safe, and they're not going to think it's safe if you don't come out and talk about why. I was just watching a couple of videos this morning from a customer, and they had three employees with disabilities, and they videotaped them talking about their experiences, and it was so powerful. It was so powerful. And then the CEO was talking about his lived experiences. And once again, when you say lived experience, it doesn't mean you yourself have to be a person with a disability, but what's your lived experiences with it, you know? And think about it and honor it and ask, you know, Nikki, you know, what is her experiences, but also how could you improve your experiences by asking her questions? The same with Sam. I think we need to break down some of the barriers we've created. People are afraid to ask the questions too. They don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah, it's true. And one last question kind of related to this topic before I turn it back over to Nikki to move on with things. But there is a danger when we are doing these inclusivity efforts that somebody who has a disability is being used for marketing or is being used as a figurehead, or that people are doing their disability marketing to the community of able-bodied folks to say, look how good we are. Don't you feel good being our customer? And they're not actually talking to the community. And how do you avoid that? How do you work with that? How do you do representation and marketing without turning people into figureheads and feel-good stories? And the word that's sometimes used is inspiration porn, right? That content that's just to make people feel good.
Yeah, the inspiration porn stuff. Yeah, you bring up a very valid point, because do you want to be the one person that's responsible for the billions of people with disabilities? You better get it right, Sam. You're the token person, get it right. I mean, it puts a lot of pressure on individuals to do that to them. And also, we don't really feel that that is inclusion. You know, we don't want to be your one token you know, person. It's got to be created throughout the entire organization. And don't think your employees and people looking in can't tell whether or not it's authentic. It can. But at the same time, there's also, you know, there's some scary stuff happening too. And I'm not going to be mean and mention the company, but there's a company right now that does overlays that is actually paying people that have disabilities in the United Kingdom and other countries to advertise for how great they are, even though a blind organization has come out and said, well, our screen readers can't use this. And so it's sort of buyer beware as individuals with disabilities too, because you should ask when they're hiring you, are you the first person they hired with a disability? What are their expectations of you? And also leave if they don't do right by you. Because right now, if you're a person with a disability and you have these technology skills that we all need, people want you. These corporations are going to be fighting for you now. They're going to be fighting for you. There are 500 minimum corporations that want to include you. So right now, this is the time to be noticed. Get out here like Nikki and Sam's doing and talk about this, because they want you. They really absolutely do want the talented individuals with disabilities. Yeah,
absolutely. And we've got to get people over that poverty mindset that you talked about earlier. If you are not being treated right and you give up your job, there is another job out there for you, right? Some people read the statistics and they get so afraid and, well, I have to do this because I have to put food on the table.
Right. They just have to put up with it. They have to put up almost with abuse. Or I remember, Sam, when I had my first company, Tech Access, 90% of the team were people with disabilities. And by the way, very proud, 90% of our team are people with disabilities too at Rue Global Impact. But how do you compete with somebody that is not including people with disabilities when you're trying to support our community? How can you even understand what our community wants and thinks? And it's just fascinating to me that, you know, that our community, being such a gigantic community, is still so excluded.
So how do you see us connecting this fragmented disabled community?
Well, I think we do it with just like we're doing right now. You know, y'all have this brand new podcast. You've already interviewed several really amazing people. And so what we do is we highlight what you're doing here, right? And then we share and we help each other. We've got to help each other. We buy and we purchase from entrepreneurs with disabilities. And, you know, we also stand up to groups that are not including us. Or if you have an equality index or something, that you can get 100% on the first time you take it. But you don't have to employ anybody with disabilities. You don't have to have accessible websites. Our community is not going to put up with that anymore. So we are finding our voice. We are coming together, but we got to support each other, help each other, and we've got to share with each other too. If we did this, we would be the most powerful community in the world. We really would be.
What are some things that people with disabilities can notice at a company that could be sort of red flags, or this isn't the company I want to work for? Do you have any of those things that you could share with people?
Well, are the systems that you have to use to do your work, are they accessible? If you use assistive technology, do they ask you what you want? Do they provide you training? Is the assistive technology up? You know, we know whether or not we're being included. Do they have a disability source group or employee group? Do they treat you like your ideas are valuable? Do they want to hear about your disability experience? Do they want to hear about it? Or do you talk a little bit about it and then all of a sudden, you know, you can tell nobody really wants to hear about it? And I agree with Sam. If the company you're working for today is not appreciating who you are, go and find another employer. They do want you openly. And I know it's dangerous to openly, you know, admit that you have something, but the reality is we're already being discriminated against now. So, are we going to be discriminated against more when we come out? I don't think so. When it's silent, that's when you get discriminated against, when people aren't talking about it. The Me Too movement showed us that. So it's exciting times, but we have to support each other.
I'm going to totally switch subjects just because, in the vein of time, what was the first piece of technology you remember using? It's totally out of right field, but we'd love to learn about our guests' use of technology.
I'm an older lady. My dad was a technologist before anybody knew what that was at AT&T, but we did get Atari So we had one of the first Ataris, and we were so excited when we got it out of the box because it was just a black screen. We know how to turn it on. We turned it on, and there was this little game in there. Pong is a pong. It's like where it threw the thing across, but we were so excited. We were using a computer. So yeah, I'm definitely old.
Hey, back when computers, they were pricier, but in some ways they were simpler and maybe more accessible in some ways and less accessible in others. It's fascinating to look back and see where we've come from.
And all the blind programmers, what programmers that were blind added to the community. I've always been fascinated with that too.
Absolutely. I think it's something that as we unite the community, there's a saying in programming, kind of eating your own dog food, which is using the tools that you create. And I can't wait to see more of that as we begin to work at bringing the community together, because I think it needs to be more than just blind people programming. There needs to be people with every kind of disability writing the tools that make them better. But anyway, I'll stop writing.
No, but I agree. We need to be buying from each other, and we need to be using each other as vendors, billion strong. We are only going to hire people that, and we can do this. We're allowed to say, this is an identity organization. We are employing people with lived experience with disabilities. I mean, that doesn't it make any sense to do it any other way.
Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to talk about?
Maybe one thing I could think of, and that another thing that we need to do as a community is make sure we are fighting for technology for all. And technology for good. So AIs, you know, we're dabbling with AI as society now, but we got to keep fighting to make sure we're included, our voices are included, and that unconscious bias is not being built into the technology. So we need to fight for technology. We need to have our voices heard when they start messing with our technology, you know, in a way that, you know, is going to make us less independent. We need to be heard more often, which was once again why it's so important to have programs like yours.
As we end things off, where can people find you? What do you want to promote? And if someone did one thing right after listening to this episode, what would you want them to do?
Oh, gosh, go and hire somebody, a talented person with disabilities, pretty please, and support them and make sure that they're paid well. And please don't leave them in the job. They want to be promoted like everybody else. Well, I'm all over social media. I'm obnoxiously all over social media, and I'm very proud to be a market influencer there. So that at Deborah Ruh, DeBraruh, and Ruh Global, and also on Billion Strong, even though we're still figuring out we want Billion Strong, but some of them is Billion Strong One. But the websites are ruhglobal.com. and billion-strong.org. And we're very active. We're very active. Please join us. You know, send us emails, texts. We will be promoting this on our YouTube channels and on all of our other channels, but we're stronger together. And this is the time. This is the time when we do it. And what do I want to promote? You know, really, please join us on Billion Strong. We need you so bad. And when I first joined the industry, I was sort of not welcomed because I was a parent. Oh, a parent. But we should welcome everyone. We should welcome parents. We should welcome siblings. We should welcome bosses and supervisors and friends. We all have to be part of the Billion Strong movement because people with disabilities aren't broken. We are already an integral part of society, but we just keep being left out. Society disables people. Society does that.
Thank you so much for being here. This was a lovely conversation.
I agree.
Thanks for listening to Disability Bandwidth. If you like this episode of Disability Bandwidth, please subscribe and share it with friends and family. Today's episode was hosted by Sam Prue and Nikki Nolan, edited by Nikki Nolan. Transcripts are written by Emma Klauber. The theme music is created by F.A. Achman. Special thanks to everyone at Fable, who, without their support, this show would not be possible. You can find out more about Disability Bandwidth on Twitter and Instagram at Disability Bandwidth, or on our website, disabilitybandwidth.com. Thanks for listening.